It's time now for Faith in Action, the program that looks at how ordinary people are putting their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is underwritten by the Knights of Columbus, Council 6923 and Fishers, and is produced by Catholic Radio Indy. If you have any comments or suggestions for this program, please contact Bridget at CatholicRadioIndy.org. That's B-R-I-G-I-D at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Or call 317-870-8400. Now, here's today's edition of Faith in Action. This is Faith in Action on Catholic Radio. I'm Jim Ganley. Our co-host is Bridget Ayer.
Hello, Jim. Hello, everyone.
And Bridget, we've got a guest that we want to get right to today. This is a guest that everybody who listens to Catholic Radio will know because they hear him every day here on Catholic Radio. And he was also a speaker at our dinner. We had our dinner here just a few weeks back this year, but a few years back, our guest was actually the speaker at our dinner.
Yeah, our guest today is the famous Dr. Ray Guarendi. So welcome to Faith in Action, Dr. Ray.
Good to be with you guys. By the way, I did have a wonderful time a couple of years ago when I was with you. The chicken was a little cold, but I didn't want to say anything until now.
Well, you know, it's you know, when you got those things that you want to say, it's just good to get them out, right? Because you're a psychologist, so is it good to get things off your chest then?
Bridget, I feel better now. I've been carrying that for I can't tell you how long.
Well, we enjoyed having you, and we're looking forward to our conversation here today on our Faith in Action program.
Well, one of the things that we're going to talk about is your brand new book,
Jesus. Oh, he didn't write another
book. Yeah, he did.
How many is that, Dr. Ray?
Well, yeah, how many good ones? actual books, I think 17.
17, wow, okay.
That's amazing. Well, I think the title is actually, and in all seriousness, is brilliant. It's called Jesus, the Master Psychologist. Did you come up with that yourself, or how'd you come up with the title?
I did, and it was something I went to the publisher folks and said, "Hey, come on, let me have this title." See, they all have their ideas about mm-hmm. what a good title is.
Sure,
you know, they got their marketing folks, and then usually the writer and the editors and the marketing folks just kind of kibitz about it all. But they're so good at Sophia and EWTN. They give me a lot of leeway. And then the Listen to Him subtitle, I had as a subtitle, whatever he tells you to do it, kind of taken off of what Our Lady said at the wedding feast of Cana. But they said, that's kind of long, so we came up with Listen to Him, which I actually like Listen to Him better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to talk about the state of mental health in the United States. I think you made a mention when you were at the Cincinnati Men's Conference just a couple months back. I watched that remotely, and you talked about, you know, this pandemic that we've been through, but you talked more about that it's been more of a pandemic of fear than like a health pandemic. Not that it isn't a health pandemic, but talk about what you were talking about as it relates to that in terms of fear and mental health.
The perfect storm. One, we've pushed God further to the periphery of our culture. So that means our living right now is all that matters for many. Two, our last 50, 60, 70 years, we've become a very, very risk-averse society. Anything that even smells like it could affect my well-being, get rid of it. Get rid of it now. That's two. Three, and this is something that is very personal to me. When I wrote my first book, probably 35 years ago, I was in middle school. I was the only kid in middle school who wrote a book. And it was called You're a Better Parent Than You Think. And one of the things the book talked about was how the experts have really undercut parents. That parenting is now in the hands of experts. If you want to do it psychologically correctly, you follow what the experts say. Well, we've become an expert culture. Whatever the experts say, we just swallow. We recognize they don't always agree, of course not. And in the pandemic, so much of the confusion is because the experts, in a lot of ways, aren't agreeing. And so the average person is left to find some kind of consensus to live by. Four, this is a big one. When someone is in a professional field, by and large, they tend to focus completely on their field. In other words, medical people want to save lives. And that's their goal. If they've got something that is high-profile, threatening lives, then they've got to stop it. However, they may not be so good at looking at the invisible consequences of it all. Mm-hmm. For example, I've had heart surgeons, the cardiologists tell me that a lot of people are coming in much, much worse shape.
Yeah.
Because they avoided follow-ups for a year because they were so afraid of coming to the hospital because of COVID. The percentage of college kids who have pondered suicide is off the charts now. It has exploded. Why? Because you took away so much of the positive activities that people use to keep themselves in a good mood, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
More kids are afraid. They're looking at masks like, does this mean I'm going to die? Are my parents going to die? We have unbelievable amounts of isolation for all that time among our seniors. There is a boatload of psychological research that says isolation itself is devastating to one's physical health. So all these things are the byproducts of our reaction. And I've said often on the show, and I've gotten grief for it from people, that's for sure. We've got to balance this. We can't just simply say, at all costs, we have to stop this. Because I always want to say to folks, well, let me give you an example. You know, that right now the mask debate with kids in schools is the big one, right, guys?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Johns Hopkins just recently did a study. 45,000 children. They wanted to see if the children were at risk from COVID. And they said, among healthy children, now they did have some who had serious illnesses, but among healthy children, how many of that 45,000 you think died from COVID?
One?
I don't
Zero?
Know.
Too high. Zero.
Wow.
Too high. So you see what's happening. I mean, the numbers, in many respects, deserve to be questioned. And the average age of a COVID death is 80-something.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that's tragedy in and of itself. That's not saying that elderly people don't matter. What it's saying is that something that is of serious risk to older people, we have basically turned around and made everybody react a certain way with all kinds of unexpected, untoward, invisible consequences. And if you bring that up, You get anger. You get accused of not caring about people's lives. You get accused of not understanding the seriousness of this. I'll tell you, when this first came about, when the COVID thing came up, because it is a mass phobia. It truly is. I see it as a psychologist. I've never seen anything like it. When this first came up, and I started talking about the invisible consequences of our reactions, oh, boy. Ooh, the emails were as nasty as anything I've ever gotten. And to show you the point, I've never gotten nasty emails when I've talked about abortion like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which tells you the level of self-interest.
That's saying something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, now when I talk about it, I do not get anywhere near that level. And I think it's because people are getting fatigued. You cannot keep up a level of fear over a long period of time. The body responds and says, stop it.
We're talking with Dr. Ray Guarendi, and he is the radio talk show host of The Doctor Is In, which is right here on the station. And you have
1 o'clock every day.
Yep. And you have many, many other talents. And we're talking about your new book, Jesus, the Master Psychologist, Listen to Him. I want you to give an overview of the book and why you wrote it.
We are expert driven, and therefore how we run our lives are geared by the experts, by psychology, by enlightened notions about what is a good way to live. It all comes down to this, guys. Who was Jesus? If you decide, on the basis of the evidence, that he was God, that he was who he said he was, and there's plenty of evidence for an open-minded person to conclude that, then you have to conclude also that what he said about living is the way to do it. Whether psychology agrees, whether psychology doesn't agree. whether you agree, whether you don't agree. You can ignore him, but you may not realize the consequences of ignoring him because he tells you the best way to live. He's got to know the best way to live. So if I, as Ray Garendi, say, well, you know, I don't like that turn the other cheek thing. I mean, that, you know, if a guy does something to me, he needs to be taught a lesson. There's no question about that. That doesn't make any sense to me. Well, if I do that, I better be prepared for the consequences of the way I think, because Jesus says that ain't a good way to think. Now, the book basically takes about 20 or 21 of our Lord's comments, our Lord's remarks, our Lord's guidance about living a better life, and says, okay, why does this make sense? Why logically does this help us live better? And was he 2,000 years ahead of modern psychology, or does he clash with modern psychology? That's the tone of the book.
So who is the book geared towards? I mean, is there a certain audience you're looking for? Is it young, old, Catholic, any of the above, or non-Catholic? Could you be non-Catholic, Jewish, whatever?
A good book has to be readable. The phrase that I love the most is, if something is easy to read, it was hard to write.
Mm.
It has to be something that you can look at and say, you know what, I'm not going to plow through 9 dependent clauses and try to figure out the theology behind this, and oh my gosh, this is deep, and he's using words I don't understand. Not at all. It is written for any audience. I think a teenager could read it and say, okay, I understand this. I see the point he's making. I see why Jesus said this and why this works and why psychology confirms that it works or why psychology says it doesn't work. I can see that. It's real easy to understand. So anybody could read it, even non-Christians, even if they say something dumb. And this is really the dumbest thing you can say about Jesus. He was a good man. That's really dumb. Because a guy that says he was God is not a good man. He's either a nutcase or he's a knowing liar. And he drew people to their deaths because he told them to follow him in a very hostile culture. So you can't say he's a good man. Now, some people, believe it or not, still say that. Maybe that seems to be the dominant view of Christ among our intelligentsia. Oh, well, he's kind of like a skinny Buddha or a fat Gandhi, you know, Mr. Rogers. That's who Jesus is. You know, he's just got some nice ideas here. Well, okay, but you can weigh his ideas on whether they seem to work. You know, I asked a priest once, I said, for you, what is the biggest piece of evidence that Christianity is true? He didn't even hesitate. He said, the system works. I said, what system? Are you talking the clerical system? Are you talking liturgical? What are you talking? What kind of system? He said, the moral system works. And it does. What Jesus says to do or not do. I'll give you a small example. He says, when you do what you're supposed to do, simply say, I'm an unworthy servant. Or some translations, I'm a worthless servant. Now, that goes totally against the reigning self-esteem gospel. The gospel says we're all wonderful. We're all uniquely special human beings. You have to recognize that. And as long as I think I'm wonderful, all kinds of good things are going to happen. I'm going to be less neurotic. I'm going to be more achieving. I'm going to have better social relations. I'm going to have less mosquito bites. I'll have less psoriasis. All of this will happen because I have a good self-image. Well, the research says, no, that's not what happens. The research has looked at self-image up one side and down the other and said it's not something that leads to all this. If you recognize that you are infinitely valuable in God's eyes, that's the best self-image. Your self-image doesn't hinge around anything that you accomplish in the world's eyes. Because if you seek that, if you seek 192 followers and 64 thumbs up, you're still not satisfied. Why wouldn't you be? And Jesus says you're not. Your satisfaction comes from just doing what you're supposed to do. And that's an idea that has long since left our culture.
We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into some everyday practical problems that we have, like jealousy and that problem child that you have. So we're going to hear some great advice from Dr. Ray. So stay
tuned. Piece of cake for Dr. Ray.
Piece of cake.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Alexa, what's the weather forecast for today?
Alexa, what time is the Colts game today?
Alexa, remind me to pick up the dry cleaning tomorrow.
Has Alexa become a part of your daily routine? Then make sure that routine includes Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Quick, easy access to Catholic programming 24/7. Just say, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
It's foundation, and that foundation is the Word of Jesus Christ.
Catholic Radio Indy.
To help lift my spirit and brighten my mood.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. I'm Bridget Ayer. Jim Ganley and I are in the studio, and we're talking with our guest, Dr. Ray Guarendi.
Famous.
A well-known Catholic psychologist and radio talk show host of The Doctor Is In, and author of his latest new book. I think we're up to getting close to 20 new books, not 20 new books, but 20 total books, Jesus, the Master Psychologist. Listen to him. I want to talk a little bit about, let's just pick a topic, jealousy. How are people supposed to deal with jealousy from a, I guess, Jesus's perspective?
Jealousy is one of those things that I want what you have. I don't like necessarily that you get accolades. I don't like you have that talent. I don't like that your three kids are sweethearts and mine set fires and torture small barnyard animals. Okay, I don't like that. So jealousy really springs, I believe, from pride. And underneath pride is insecurity, which is, why can't I have that? Why can't I do that? Why do they have that amount of wealth and I don't? Why does Jim Ganley get to have a radio program and I never will? So jealousy eats the person up that is jealous. And when our Lord says you got to have peace, how are you going to have peace if all you do is look around you and do nothing but compare?
Mm-hmm.
Comparing will destroy you. Our Lord knew what he was talking about. He said, don't do it. It's not a good way to live. And part of it comes from the fact that I deserve that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a horrible attitude, but it's pervasive, especially in our culture. You know, everybody gets a trophy. I deserve a trophy. You know why I won the Humility Award all those years? You know why? Well, because when they had the three finalists, it was me and two other people, the two other people showed up to collect their trophy.
Ah,
I didn't.
There you go.
Now, if you show up to collect your trophy, you lose it. You can't have humility and then get your trophy. So when I said, no, I can't come and collect this trophy, I won it.
There you go.
But I still can't collect it, so it's just sitting there gathering dust.
Yeah, I was going to ask you where you display that, but I...
I can't. If you display it, Jim, they'll come and take it.
I didn't know we were going to get into the humility of trophies or the trophy humility or whatever. All right, I want to get into some negativity. How do you turn negativity into a harnessed virtue without changing your nature? Is it possible?
When our Lord said, take the log out of your own eye, most mm-hmm. people think that means if you're going to correct somebody, make sure you see yourself. Okay. I think it's much broader than that. Insight is something that you have to have. You don't have insight into who you are, you're not going to improve. Mm. You're not going to be a better disciple. And even if you're not a Christian, you're just not going to get to be a better person, because you've got to be able to at least see yourself somewhat to know what you're like, your good, your bad, your weaknesses, your strengths. So if you don't recognize when you're thinking in bad ways, you're just going to think in those bad ways. You know, Descartes, the philosopher, said, I think, therefore I am. I think there's an irrational twist on that that many people follow, which is, I think, therefore it is. And I think when you're thinking negative about people, about yourself, you always got to ask yourself, am I accurate? Is this reflecting reality? Is this who I am? Is this who they are? Now, most people don't do that. I'll tell you guys, they don't. One, it takes psychological effort. Two, it takes God's grace. And three, we just kind of automatically assume that the way we look at things reflects reality. And take it from a therapist. When somebody comes in the office, they got all kinds of ideas about themselves, about their marriage, about their life, about their emotions. And good therapy uncovers those ideas and decides which ones make sense and which ones are causing distress and negativity.
Very interesting. I want to ask you, Dr. Ray, one of your points is that there are benefits of having problem children. And I'm sure a lot of people in our audience have a problem child. So talk about the benefits. And before we got back on the air here, I asked you, does everybody have a problem child? I'm just curious your perspective on that as well.
I said, well, yeah, if you have enough kids, you're going to have one. What the heck? You're playing the law of averages here, you know? They all got different personalities. Okay, there's good news and bad news. The bad news is there are kids who can push you all the way to your limits. That's just the way it is. Oftentimes I'll talk to parents with 6, 7, 8 kids, and they'll say, I got one kid that gives me more trouble than all the others put together. Okay, that's reality. But here's the good news. A problem child can be way more problem or way less problem depending upon the parent's confidence and discipline skills. I will tell you guys that most of the people who come in my office with a problem child think that they have been cursed with Cujo or Chucky or Lucifer. And nobody on God's earth could raise this child. But in fact, more than half the time at least, if we improve their discipline skills, get them to be more consistent, more firm, more follow through, less yell, less scream, more consequences, making sure their authority is in fact accepted by this child, and I can teach them how to do that. Which, if you guys want to know, listening, you have to buy the book. How's that for a chance?
Little plug there.
I figured I'd throw that baby in. So given that, once they do this, sometimes in 2 to 4, 6 weeks, they'll come back and they'll say, I don't know who this child is. This is a completely different person that I've been living with. And I'll say, wait a minute. If he was a problem child, if he was so difficult, if he was so challenging, if he was so high maintenance, if he was so strong-willed, all those things you were convinced that he was by nature, why do you see a different child now? And they'll smile and they'll smirk and they'll say, well, I guess a lot of it was me, wasn't it? And I'll say, yeah. It doesn't mean they're bad parents. It just means they underestimated what they needed to do to get this child under better control. And that's probably the number one reason that people think they have problem children. Now, like I tell folks, I got 10 kids. They're all grown now. Some of them going to serve a church. Some of them probably going to serve time, you know? It all varies. They all got different temperaments.
That's awesome. Well, I think you've given our listeners some real encouraging ideas here, but I know you wanted to get to something that perplexes you. The last chapter of the book, what is that?
People will ask me, you've seen a lot as a shrink in these 40-plus years? I say, yeah, I've pretty much seen everything many times. Well, what puzzles you the most about people? And I'll say, I've come to this conclusion. I don't understand, especially as people move toward their latter years of life, where they can no longer be 22 and think their life lies ahead of them infinitely, why they don't pay more attention to the whole God question and what he would like of us. I'm stunned. It's as though they think they're still going to live forever, no matter how old they are. And psychology has to deal with self-interest. People are motivated by self-interest. It's bent human nature. Well, self-interest, you would think, would drive people to say, all my life I've ignored God, or all my life I've put God in the shelf, or all my life I've had a marginal relationship with God and Jesus. Maybe I ought to look into this a little more deeply now. Maybe I ought to see if I can get stronger in my faith, in my charity, because, you know, I'm 83 years old, mm-hmm. and I ain't going to live a whole lot longer. So that puzzles me more than anything why so many people who have neglected God all their lives, even as they get toward the end of their lives, don't think about it. Stuns me. I can't wrap my head around it. I want to say, don't you even think about your mortality? Remember when Jesus, one of the quotes I think was, I've got enough for my grain barns. I'll store them all up. Now I'll just eat, drink, and be merry. And Jesus said, you fool, this very night your life will be required of you. And that is the quote that leads into that chapter, because it's one where, you know, I know it's going to be surprising you guys, but this is as old as I've ever been. You know that? I am older now than when we started this interview.
Yep.
So are we.
Yeah. You could also say this is as young as you've ever been, too. As young as you're going to be, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But why? They did a survey, a fascinating survey. They asked the elderly, and these are folks probably in their 80s and 90s, how much longer do you think you're going to live? The answer was, from virtually all of them, at least another year. Now, if people think that, if no matter what age they are, they think they're going to live at least another year, then it fools them.
Mm.
I really don't have to entertain this Jesus stuff, this God stuff, this morality stuff, this church stuff. Why? I got time. Still got time. So mm-hmm. that perplexes me the most, guys.
Well, that's very fascinating. Where can you get the book?
Well, I'll tell you, it's a million seller. There are a million in my cellar. if you want a signed copy, just go to my website, drray.com, drray.com, and all the other books are there, too.
All right.
Well, it's a funny book. I've read parts of it.
And the title again is?
The title is Jesus, the Master Psychologist, Listen to Him. You can get that at drray.com, or you can listen to Dr. Ray right here on this channel. The doctor is in at 1 o'clock every day, weekdays. Dr. Ray, thanks so much for being our guest today on Faith in Action.
Well, thank you, guys.
You've been listening to Faith in Action, the program that looks at how ordinary people are putting their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is underwritten by the Knights of Columbus, Council 6923, and Fishers, and is produced by Catholic Radio Indy. If you have comments or suggestions for guests or topics for this program, please email Brigid@CatholicRadioIndy.org. That's Brigid at CatholicRadioIndy.org, or call 317-870-8400. This program is pre-recorded.